Lopate. Miguel Cejudo won the Man Asian Literary Prize for his debut novel, Ilustrado, before it was even published. The novel spans 150 years of Philippine history, yet every chapter is delightfully fresh, surprising, and even funny. Miguel Cejudo, welcome to our show today.
Hi, Elliot. Thanks for having me.
Congratulations to you.
Thank you very much.
For all of your success. What inspired you to write this? Has it been crazy?
It has been crazy. A big surprise. I think I'm the most surprised out of everyone.
Why?
Well, you know, I mean, you spend years in wallowing in self-doubt and you think, well, this book will never be published. It's too challenging. It's too weird. It's too unconventional. And then all of a sudden it's published by a good publisher and people are actually reading it. So, wow, you know, I mean, I'm very, very fortunate.
There must have been a moment where you thought it was possible, otherwise you wouldn't have entered the Man Asian Prize.
Well, you know, I mean, I just keep swinging at everything. I kept sending it out to agents, to publishers, to all sorts of different prizes. You know, the shotgun effect, you won't get anywhere if you don't keep trying.
You were born in the Philippines. Your family lived in Canada when you were young during the Marcos years. Why all the moves?
Well, my parents thought it was a better place to live during martial law. You know, that the Philippines was a very troubled place at the time, more so than it is now. And, well, they wanted to raise us six kids in the safety of Vancouver. We moved back to the Philippines after Marcos was deposed. And in 2001, I moved to New York City to study. And ever since then, I've just been pursuing, you know, fellowships and grants and anything that'll help me just keep on writing.
Let's talk about the book, Ilustrado. What does the title mean?
The Ilustrado refers to a group of young men who in the late 1800s left the Philippines to study abroad, learned all they could, and then returned to the Philippines to contribute and play an integral part in our revolution against Spain. So it's translated from Spanish. It means the enlightened. But it refers to this group of people. But to me, it also refers to a potentiality for the diaspora right now. We're 9 million strong Filipinos, and we could all be ilustrados as well if we don't forget where we've come from.
Early in the prologue, you have one of your main characters, Crispin Salvador, say, and this is a quote, "To be an honest writer, you have to be away from home and totally alone in life." Is this more about the character or more about you?
Well, Crispin Salvador represents a lot of the things either I'm scared of or hope for. So in a sense that, yeah, he is a writer in exile who's become very embittered by having to have lived abroad away from everything he loves. So in a way, he's a cautionary tale. But I'm finding that living abroad and writing abroad does free me up from many things. I don't censor myself. I'm able to just focus on the writing. And also being away from everything that I am familiar with, and my family, my friends, my home, it does spur me to write into being, recreate in my head the sights and sounds and scents of the place that I miss.
What do you want us to know about the plot without giving too much away?
It's a book about many, many things. It starts off with the death of Crispin Salvador. He's found in the Hudson River. So it starts off as a murder mystery. He's the great lion of Philippine letters. But his young student, Miguel Cejudo, returns to the Philippines because he doesn't think that Crispin's death was a suicide. He thinks it was murder because missing from Crispin's apartment is a mysterious manuscript that was supposed to expose all the corruption behind the Philippine ruling elite. So Miguel comes home and finds a country in absolute turmoil. Elections are imminent. Politicians are jockeying for power. There are explosions that aren't being claimed by any terrorist groups. A big storm is brewing. And Miguel finds that the book is as much his own story as it is Crispin's. But I've written the book as a series of fragments, so it does span 150 years of Philippine history. And it's got sex and drugs and old school techno music and religion and politics. I've put my life into it.
Well, speaking of putting your life into it, you've also put your name in it. Lest anybody be confused, the character's name is Miguel Cejudo, as is your name.
Yes.
So were you trying to confuse us in a little way? What was the thinking about using your own name as a character?
I was trying to keep the readers a little bit off balance, always questioning what is real, what is not. If this is possibly autobiographical, then could Crispin's work actually be real? And it, could all of these things that are being said about the Philippines also be real? And I hope that the reader gets to the end of the book asking all these questions, a little bit off balance, because when you're off balance, you're focusing, you're engaged. And when they get to the end of the book, they ask this question, what is real, what is not? And they discover that, well, it doesn't matter. And that's the short answer. It doesn't matter. It matters in relation to the book.
You've created the works of this other fictional writer, Crispin, and you do this with blogs and short stories and jokes and all sorts of things. What's the difference between his voice and yours?
Crispin sometimes likes to play with magical realism, likes to play with very purple prose, likes to exoticize sometimes. A lot of the tropes and a lot of the cliches that Asian writers or Asian American writers sometimes adhere to too much, because you know they sell, or there's the magical realism boom, or there's the Asian American identity boom. So I parody those sorts of forms through Crispin's work, and I'd like to think that the narrator's, Miguel's, is a little bit punchier, a little bit more pared down.
You have a reading for us. There's a selection you'd want to share with us today.
Sure, I do. This is from Somewhere in the Middle. Miguel has come home to the Philippines. Familiar sights grind by as the pedestrians blur past, faster than a stranded cab. The gleaming, splendiferous malls, the guarded gates of Forbes Park, where a prodigal protagonist grew up. The Manila Polo Club, where he and Gerald, his brother, learned to play tennis, always swinging for over the back fence to see the ball boys climb like monkeys after the balls. The large home of the U.S. ambassador with its cameras and high walls. The larger home of the Sultan of Brunei's brother's Filipina mistress. Santuario de San Antonio Church, where all his relatives and friends are, and always will be, baptized, communioned, wedded, waked, interred. The brawny 10-lane EDSA Boulevard, host to 4 peaceful revolutions. All who return to Manila love to say nothing changes, but that's not true. More soaring overpasses are stacked atop each other. More rows of billboards stand like upright dominoes, sporting pretty Brobdingnagian mestizas in low-cut jeans or lingerie. There is now a Starbucks across from Santuario, where you can wash down the host with a grande mocha frappuccino. From where he sits, he counts 6 towering cranes, pirouetting, and 4 new skyscrapers, each striving higher than the other and those that were there before. The pace of Asian progress is ostentatious. Here in Makati, this is not a poor country. The Shell station around outside Forbes Park, where he used to get gas, the flashing lights of police cars and fire trucks urge spectators beyond a cordon. Commuters at a safe distance stare at something beside the gas pumps, a duffel bag. 2 policemen approach it sheepishly. They edge sideways like adolescent boys along the wall at a school dance. Their brown uniforms and caps make them look cruelly vulnerable. 1 cop crouches beside the bag, unzips it tentatively, holding himself at arm's length, face turned away. "Oh my God," says the taxi driver. "Don't do it, don't do it." The other cop cranes his neck and peeks in. The taxi driver makes the sign of the cross. Both cops jump back. Everyone stares at the bag. Nothing happens. The 2 cops approach again slowly, drag it carefully away from the pumps. A sudden flash of light, smoke, the rattling of the taxi windows, a thunderclap, and the 2 men are no more. Car alarms scream, nobody moves. Suddenly everyone is moving. The cabbie leans on his horn, cursing at the cars in front, who do the same to those in front of them. Now that it's done, nobody wants to be involved. The protagonist, the boy, bends over, breathing gingerly, trying not to vomit into the taxi's Power Rangers tissue box holder.
Miguel Cejuco, reading from his award-winning debut novel, Ilustrado. I'm Elliot Forrest, filling in for Leonard Lopate. The book addresses corruption of the ruling elite in the Philippines, and it was released in April, just before a major election in May. Do you think you had any say in encouraging people to talk more about politics and be more open about what was going on?
Well, you know, I hope to. I did ask my publishers to try to get it out as early as possible before the election. I have no illusion that, you know, millions of Filipinos will read this book and then all of a sudden decide to oust the ruling class and create a utopia. But, you know, as a writer, one hopes that if you can just reach 5 or 10 or 20 people, make them rethink things, make them possibly consider going to vote when they weren't going to, make them discuss things a little bit more, then you're doing something, well, a little bit important. And I hope to be able to do that.
Your father won his election to Congress in May. This is the same seat your mother had held?
Yes.
Have they talked to you? What have they talked to you about the book in regard to the politics that you've included?
Well, the thing is, the seat was my mother's, but she was filling in for my father as he was working for the Arroyo administration as a cabinet minister. I don't know if my dad has read it yet because he's been busy with politics. It came out, you know, just before the election, so he was busy campaigning. My mom has read it, and she enjoyed it very much. She felt that I was telling a lot of telling very honestly many of the things that need to be talked about in the Philippines. And by and large, you know, not just my family, but, you know, my classmates or a lot of the people from the class or the groups that I'm a little bit critical of, I think they do feel that I'm articulating many of the frustrations that we Filipinos do share.
Any interest in running for office yourself?
Every time I go back, I think, yeah, I would like to, because I want to do something a little bit more hands-on. But I do believe that writing can be a political act, depending on what you write about. It is telling the story of ourselves. It is revealing things that need to be revealed. And I feel that, well, with my idealism and my optimism, I think I would be chewed up and spat out if I entered Philippine politics.
Is part of this an attempt to really let the rest of us know more about the Philippines than we already know?
Certainly.
Do you think that there's a gap in most people's knowledge about what's going on?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In the 1980s, we were a little bit more popular in terms of writing fiction or films or documentaries. We were popular because of, you know, these larger-than-life Marcoses and the EDSA Revolution, and then we fell away as history moved on.
And almost in a cliche, that's the one thing that everyone might know.
Exactly. Or they know us as maids and domestic migrant workers and that sort of thing. And we're all those things and a whole lot more, though. And that's why I wanted to chart 150 years of Philippine history, to explain where we've come from and where we're going so that people have a more nuanced understanding. And I also think it's important to remember that the Philippines was the America's first foray into this imperialist sort of exporting of democracy. And 100 years on, we have, you know, the descendants of the people who were put into power. And it's to me, it really resonates with what's going on in Iran and Iraq, where we're putting into power people who are, where we've exported democracy, and we're putting into power people who are sympathetic to the Western causes. And I think it's important to look at what's happened in the Philippines over the past 100 years if we're to understand what could happen to Iraq and Afghanistan 100 years from now with their own forms of democracy.
You're obviously a big successful writer now and award-winning. But I had read that at a time you were selling things on eBay to make a living. Is that true?
I sure was.
How did that work out?
Well, New York's a tough city, and I would go down to the sample sales and buy bags for $5, designer bags with the tags still on them. I would sell them on eBay for the tag price, and make, you know, $5, sell them for $100. It was a good way of making money.
What else do you want us to know about the book? If people are thinking about going out and getting it, what do you think is the one thing people should know?
I think they should know that it is a surprising book. I've worked in, you know, the mythology that of jokes within the book, so I've got a string of dirty jokes. And I think it's a book that people have to come to without any expectations, because it will, hopefully, it will surprise them.
And did I read you've got another book? You're ready for a second?
I've got lots of books in me, I think.
Have they been sold?
I have sold my second book, To Forest, Russ, and Giroux here, and Penguin in Canada. And it will be a book about the Philippines as well. I don't always want to be writing about the Philippines. I want to challenge myself as a writer. But there are a lot of stories to be told.
And are you optimistic about the politics in the Philippines? Do you think that young vote, for example, has changed things and that things will continue to get better?
I do think so. I don't know if it's because we have no choice, but, 2 months ago, I wasn't as optimistic. Now we have this president who does seem to have all the best intentions and does seem to be quite noble. But the real question is whether or not he can negotiate the sharks and wolves of Philippine politics, and or if he'll be corrupted like our last President Arroyo. So I am optimistic, but you know, if you have me back on the show next year, I'll tell you whether or not that optimism still stands.
All right, good. That's a deal. And the Man Asian Prize, if it's not impudent to ask, did it come with a cash prize?
It did. It did. $10,000, which went off to paying part of my huge credit card debt collection that I had at the time.
As we all have.
Well, you know, you can't make too much of a living selling bags on eBay.
All right, well, but I'd love to take a look at them if you're still telling me. Miguel Sahuco is the author of Ilustrado, which won the Man Asian Literary Prize in 2008. I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
It's my great pleasure. Thank you.